Douglas Jacoby here. And yes, it's true. You may have heard I visit cemeteries very frequently. In fact, I'm in one right now, as you can see the gravestones behind me. This is where I normally come to pray. You will wonder, is that not a little bit morbid? Why do you come to a cemetery? It's because life is short, and the cemetery, at least this one, is full of about 18,000 reminders that I want my life to count. This is directly connected to iFaith message 54 from the book of Exodus. Because in the book of Exodus, there are two competing systems, gods and pharaohs. Pharaoh says your worth, your value, the sum value of your life is what you produced. Bricks, in the case of the Hebrews once they were enslaved. Yet the Lord says that our value, and this has been explained in the previous book in Genesis, is a function of our being created in God's image, that is, representing Him and His heart in this world. And it can't be both. God gives us the Sabbath to remind us we're not working machines. The Israelites had the Sabbath day, Sabbath years, every 7 years off, every 50 years off. We don't have exactly that today, but we can honor the principle of the Sabbath, which reminds us that we're not machines, with great dividends for friends and family and so forth. So I'm in the cemetery because this reminds me of what's important. One day they're going to put me under the ground. And when they do, what will life have been? What will my impact have been? If it's all about productivity, how many books I read or wrote, or how many people I met, or countries I visited, that's going to be empty. That is not what the Lord is looking for. Rather, it's about relationship. It's about love. You know, ancient Egypt was a terrific place to live, especially if you were the Pharaoh or one of his close friends, his family members, or one of the nobility in his exclusive circle. Not so great if you're a slave. Now, archaeology has shown us that Semitic peoples, including the Hebrews, were engaged in all kinds of building projects. There's an inscription from the time of the Pharaoh Thutmose II in the 1400s, a little bit before the Exodus, and it depicts these Asiatic people, like the Hebrews, engaged in making bricks. And then there's the inscription, the taskmaster warns, the rod is in my hand, do not be idle. That reminds you of your boss. Slavery was common in the ancient world. Of course, God's people weren't slaves when they found relief from famine in Egypt. They went to Egypt at the end of Genesis to escape famine in their land of Canaan. But the problem was, eventually they outnumbered, they outgrew, they outpopulated the Egyptians. And we read Exodus 1:7, and so the land was filled with them. Well, that may be a bit of an overstatement since the Jews were confined to one corner of Egypt, that is the land of Goshen, Genesis 46. But the numerical increase of the Hebrew slaves posed some kind of a threat, or at least it was felt as a threat by Pharaoh. The solution was simple, population control by killing newborn baby boys. Because they could have grown up to threaten the kingdom. Girls were not viewed as a threat. There's a clear parallel in the slaughter of the innocents in Bethlehem, Matthew 2, when King Herod orders the two-year-olds and under, the boys, to be executed because he doesn't want to share authority or be challenged for the throne by the Messiah. The big man is threatened. Fearful, one of his subjects will rise up to challenge him. And that must not happen. Violence is absolutely okay, according to Pharaoh, to maintain control, to keep the people working, to keep the people producing. Pharaoh was a builder. The Hebrews were tasked with building the store cities of Python and Ramesses. That word may sound familiar. It's not just a place, it's also the name of the Pharaoh, probably the Pharaoh of the Exodus. And why did they need store cities? Why were they storing extra? This reminds us of a certain parable in Luke chapter 12, the parable of the rich fool, whose barns were too small to store his abundant crops. Like Pharaoh, the rich fool valued production, along with the good life that is affordable to those who produce, or at least to those who benefit from their production, so that we may eat, drink, and be merry, Luke 12:19. Yale theologian Miroslav Volf describes modern society this way, that culture is the managed pursuit of pleasure. The thing is, we're working so frenetically so we can have time to relax that when it's time to relax, We're exhausted and we're distracted in 1,000 different directions anyway. Am I the only one who feels that way? And although it's doubtful that anyone listening to this talk is a literal slave, the Bible reminds us that there are different kinds of slavery. Slaves to sin, slaves to righteousness, slaves to fear of death, slaves to debt, Proverbs 22:7. That is a kind of slavery that holds millions of Christians captive. Because for the first 30 hours of their week, they're simply paying off their rent or their mortgage for enormous structures twice or triple the size of their parents' homes with so many rooms inside they could hide from one another easily. And they need those extra hours. They need that extra work time to buy all the clothes. And that's why we need large walk-in wardrobes. While many in our world own so few clothes that really all they have is one change. And that's simply so they won't have to be naked when they're washing their clothes. In the West, we spend huge amounts of money on cars and boats and second homes. And some of you, I realize, you're from a different culture. Many of you are living in Asia, and this may sound very strange. But hang on, it's the American dream. It may not be your reality right now, but it could become that. Because it's infectious, and it's something the whole world seems to want. And that's why Jesus says in Luke 12:15, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And of course, then there's our entertainment. The large screen TVs, monthly cable subscriptions, fantasy football, baseball teams, games, and so forth, vacations. The world has convinced countless men and women that the point of life is production. It's to make as much money as possible or to earn as much money as possible for your boss. Well, worth then is turned into net worth, the sum total of your assets, you know, minus your liabilities. Everything is regarded in monetary light, goods and services, personal possessions, even time. We are valuable because we produce, we make more bricks. And those who don't produce are worthless, and they should be, well, they should be punished for that. They should be pushed out and despised and not used. One day, of course, we will all lack the strength to produce as we age, and then we could be discarded. Few people want to talk about the elderly, making it harder for us to produce. And elderly people cut into our time, and man, if you could just have the extra time at the office, you wouldn't have to look after your mother or your father. You got the idea here. And so they're sequestered, not just the elderly, maybe those with various disabilities. They're put into homes, often without their own family members, interesting homes. They're forgotten and regretful and fearful in the face of what is on the other side of death. The world tells us, in effect, make more bricks. And so we do, in part because everyone else we see is obeying the command, make more bricks. And you may even have to do it without straw. Even fellow Christians fall for this and often are admired because they've, quote, done so well for themselves. Then the world says, work harder, get your own straw. And in such a world, we've got to stay connected all the time, right? Your boss might send you a text. There might be something in the mail or the email. Who knows? A telegram could come or a special Amazon Prime package delivery. And so we're available with pagers and tablets and phones. And if we're asked to work overtime, we usually say, okay, whatever it takes for the company. I'm doing this all for my family. Whatever it takes to move upward. And such productivity, and I put that in scare quotes, productivity, that erodes relationships. That hurts our health. It skews our thinking. The spirit of the world, you see, is sick. The world says love things and use people in order to obtain those things. God's way is the opposite. Love people and use things. Taskmasters, like the slave drivers in Egypt, they're never loved, but they're hated. Whether they were the 19th dynasty Egyptian ones who pushed the Hebrews around, or the taskmaster King Solomon appointed as the minister of forced labor, 1 Kings 12, or salesmen driven by monthly quotas, or other bully types, bullies we may encounter in the world of business and sometimes even in the world of church. When Pharaoh seizes control and makes comprehensive demands on our lives, men and women are dehumanized. Slaves become mere hands. How many hands do we have? Work units, not people in God's image. And those who fail to produce once again are thrown away. After all, that's logical if our worth means our monetary worth. Well, this is exactly where Pharaoh runs smack against Yahweh himself. Pharaoh, posturing as the sun god, claims power over human lives for himself. Not surprising. In Egyptian religion, humans were created not for relationship with God, because there are many gods. They are created to do work. In many ancient religions, humans are created to be slaves, so the gods have less to do, so the gods can have more of the good life. In Genesis, the book before Exodus, what do we learn? There's nothing about slavery, nothing about multiple gods, just one God. And he values us enough for relationship and to allow us to be his image, his representatives here on earth. Now, on Pharaoh's part, there's no love. Humans are never more than servants. In the Bible, God creates us not so he'll have more workers or more people to worship him, as though he needed that, but that he will have more people to love. Would you rather serve the bully Pharaoh or the true King of Kings and Lord of Lords? Fortunately for the Hebrews, God hears the cries of slaves. There will be a night of redemption. There will be an exodus, and God will bless his people richly. In the next iFaith message, number 55, we're going to look at four of the major gifts that Yahweh gave to his people, starting with redemption out of slavery. I hope you listen to that one too. Thank you for joining me here in this somber place. It's not morbid. We need to take stock of our lives. We will die one day. And when we die, what will be the worth and the measure of our life? Our life is more than just the dash between the birth year and the death year. Our life is something that can be wonderful in relationship with God and others as his image, not here to produce, but for love.